dogs, pretzels, Italian ices. These are just a few of the many flavors that can be found for sale on the streets of New York. And while tastes change over the years, the practice of selling street food is a time-honored tradition for immigrant communities in the city. This week's Please Explain, we're taking a look at the history of street food in New York City. From pickles to sweet nuts to halal carts, we're taking your questions about all things street food. And here to discuss this delicious topic with me, we have Jennifer Schiffberg, a PhD and Director of Graduate Food Studies at NYU Steinhardt, Mohammed Atiya, who is the new co-director of the Street Vendor Project at the Urban Justice Center. He's also a former food vendor. And Matt Shapiro, legal director of the Street Vendor Project. I'm thrilled to have all three of you today on Midday. Welcome.
Thanks.
Hello.
Thanks for having us.
Hi, thanks for having us.
And first, a shout out to listeners. If you are a current or former street food vendor, we definitely want to hear from you. Give us a call. Tell us about your experience as a vendor. And if you're just an avid street food fan, that's also okay. We want to hear from you. We're at 212-433-9692 or tweet us at WNYC Midday with two D's. Jennifer, I want to start with you as the historian. What was the first street food in New York City?
You know, New York City has a long, huge history of both food production and food selling, food commerce on the street. And historically, being a food vendor was one of the first avenues for new immigrants to be able to earn any kind of money, have any semblance of income and upward mobility when they moved to, you know, a new country. For many street vendors when they came, for most immigrants when they came, no matter what they were doing before, they might have been farmers, they might have been professionals.
What were they selling, though? What was the first street food?
So the earliest stuff they were selling, it was mostly, you know, it would be, obviously, it was inexpensive. So it was going to be in communities, mostly immigrant communities, economically fragile communities, and ones that were very densely populated.
Like,
so they would
lower,
sell the food that
downtown.
People wanted to eat. Yes. So certainly on the Lower East Side, which is both a mythical marker of immigration as well as a factual marker of where immigration began in New York. And so they were selling everything. And it was way before we had brick and mortar restaurants or brick and mortar stores. It was even before there were you know, stationary carts. Vendors were mobile. Vendors were on the move. So they would sell
But you're
bagels.
Talking about like the 19th century, or are you talking about like if you go back to the days of the Dutch, were people peddling street food, I'm sure? There were plenty of immigrants, you know, all coming then and people were eating oysters on the streets, right?
Yes, people were. But remember, the city was not nearly as populated.
Right.
So you don't have the population boom in the city until 1880, the beginning of the 1880s when you have that big surge of what we now call the mass migration of 1880 to 1920. So before that, there was much more subsistence eating. You know, the city was really farmland and people were growing their own food, or people were living near coasts and they were gathering their own oysters.
So as more immigrants came and there's the hustle and bustle effect, then they start selling things on the street to folks as they're going to and from?
Yes. So that's where you really start to see the beginning of the culture of street vending in the city. And so things like bagels. Bagels were, you know, that are clearly, it's like the ubiquitous bread of New York, but prior to that, it was sold in immigrant communities, mostly Eastern European Jewish immigrants. That was the largest group influx that was living in the Lower East Side. And they were being sold by mostly young boys. They would have the bagels on a long pole. Think about like a broom handle. And with one hand, the young boy would be holding the broom handle. On the other hand, he had a stick. So somebody would point to the one that they wanted. So you'd kind of take
a dowel. Delicacies were they selling back then?
Pickles were huge. Yeah. Pickles were huge. So Essex Street, you know, throughout New York, there are streets where a certain type of food would or a certain type of business would congregate. So think about even the Bowery today. You know, now it's all chic high-rise hotels, but prior to that, it was restaurant equipment. And even each block of it, there might be two blocks where it was just chairs and two blocks where it was coffee machines and two blocks where It was lighting
fixtures. So it was like a captive market for anybody who wanted to sell them food.
Yes, absolutely. And Essex Street was Pickle Row. And so while there were pickle vendors on the Lower East Side throughout it, it was mostly, if you wanted pickles, you went to Essex Street. And you could literally smell it in the air. And they were in stores. They were selling them directly from barrels.
Right.
So there would be, a vendor might have three barrels. He'd have a barrel of full sour, a barrel of half sour, you know, and a barrel of dill or a barrel of,
But did the street food change a lot after the Great Depression? You know, when did we start seeing push carts and hot dogs and, you know, pretzels, things like that?
So you start seeing, you see hot dogs pretty early. You see pretzels pretty early. The changes happen, it's outside forces that influence it. So in the Depression, you see a surge of it, an increase in it. But remember, the mass migration is 1880 to the mid-1920s. Shortly after the end of mass migration, we're hit with an economic depression. Mm-hmm. And so the food businesses that are really negatively impacted are going to be restaurants.
Okay,
they're going to be more expensive places, and so you're going to see the surge of street vending because that is a less expensive alternative.
Right, there's no overhead. Yeah.
Right, it's less costly to be an entrepreneur in that business, but also as a consumer, it gives you a lot more flexibility. I mean, you can afford to buy stuff on the street, whereas you might not be able to afford to buy stuff at a brick and mortar business.
I want to go to a call. We have a caller from Long Island named Kate. Welcome to Midday.
Thank you.
Hi, I hear you have a memory of you've heard about a type of food that was sold.
My mother actually had a memory of early 20th century living in Brooklyn, and her parents, she and her parents could also buy something on the street called Arbus, A-R-B-U-S, and it was chickpeas in a paper cone, and I think they were hot or they were roasted, I'm not sure.
Does that ring any bells for anyone here?
Yeah, does anybody have a recollection of that or know about that?
Jennifer?
I have not heard of it.
How about Mohammed Atiyah the Street Vendor Project? Ever heard of it?
Not really.
Long before your time?
Yeah, I believe so.
My dad remembered something being sold on the boardwalk, I think, when he was a kid, and he just turned 80, and I think it was like a takey cup. It was something with like Chinese noodles in it.
Oh, wow.
I don't know. There's been all different types of things. This is New York.
You go through history. I mean, the diversity is astounding, but we'll have to look into the chickpeas.
Yeah.
That sounds really interesting. Maybe we can get a vendor today to start selling a roasted chickpeas.
Right. So,
and it might have been called something else.
Yeah,
you know, and the roasted chickpeas, roasted chestnuts, all the roasted nuts were really popular, and they're going to change by communities. So it could be, you know, a roasted chickpea, just dry roasted, has one very sort of distinctive nutty flavor. But if it's roasted and it's roasted with cumin, or it's roasted with mm-hmm. coriander, or it's roasted in chili oil, it's going to have a very different flavor profile.
Let's skip ahead to the more present day, where we see a lot of halal carts. When did that become really popular? Jennifer, do you want to take that, or Muhammad?
Maybe Muhammad should take it.
Muhammad Atiyah, you used to be a street vendor.
Yeah. So,
did you have a halal cart?
Yeah, I do actually. I still have it. Like, my partner runs it for like quite a long time now. And actually, we've seen the halal cart starting being in the street, obviously, since the 90s, early in the 90s, when a lot of Muslim vendors came to the business and they started selling hot dogs and pretzels. And then mm-hmm. they found out that the hot dogs and pretzels cannot be actually a full meal for some folks. So they want to provide some halal food for a lot of customers who are Muslims and they're really looking for the halal food. Of course, they can afford going to the restaurants and, you know, like the halal food restaurants are very few. So and also it's very costly and like very far away. So they start coming up with the halal food carts. And I believe that the very first carts started in Manhattan and Midtown, and some of them are like so famous that they're still in business till today.
Where were those vendors from? What countries did they come from?
Most of them are from Egypt, where I'm from.
And were they selling to other Muslims? Were they trying to sell meals to other Muslims or to make food that they themselves liked? Or did they think that this was going to be like a mass market success to sell halal food?
Well, I had many conversations before with like those people who started this idea and this business. And they said that like their main target was some of the taxi drivers. So the taxi drivers drive all over the city, and most of them are Muslims from many different countries, from Africa, from Pakistan, from Egypt, from Morocco. They can really find some halal food that's affordable, and they can really get full by pretzel or hot dog every day. They won't do that every day.
So that was their main customer.
Was their main customer. That's what I heard. And then like it exploded all over the city, and now every New Yorker love halal food. They even go and say, hey, you have halal food. This is just like a trademark now. It is not, it's not something different.
Well, I'm talking with Mohammed Atiya, who's the co-director of the Street Vendor Project at the Urban Justice Center. We also have Matt Shapiro, legal director of the Street Vendor Project, and historian Jennifer Schiff Berg, who's the director of graduate food studies at NYU Steinhardt. And we are taking calls because this is Please Explain. We want your questions about street food, especially if you're a vendor and you have a question or you want to tell us about your experience, or if you're just a fan of the food of the streets. Give us a call at 212-433-9692. You can also tweet us at WNYC Midday. So, Mohammed, you know, you said you ran a halal cart and you still do have one. What's it like to sell food on the streets of New York? You know, how do you get into this business? And I imagine it's got to be pretty hard because you're bearing the elements all year round.
That's true. It is very hard and it's so complicated. And when I just started working in the street, I was just selling and working for somebody. So it took me years to save money. And then I had to wait for my best friend who came from Egypt years later.
You're also from Egypt?
I am also from Egypt.
And what were you doing here in New York? Why did you decide to become a vendor?
Well, when I just got here, I was working in a store, like a really part-time. So I couldn't really afford to live here. So I went into vending. And I found out that vending is really kind of not an easy job, but it's a doable job for me that I can actually do with my very limited English skills back then. So like it was like a really big platform for such a new immigrant who just came here to New York.
What did you sell?
When I started, I was selling halal food
in
a cart, like chicken and rice and lamb and falafel and all that stuff. And then I worked with somebody selling hot dogs and pretzels in Times Square. So that was like really exciting for me. It was really nice, but it had like many challenges. So I can tell you it was really hard.
Working in Times Square or selling hot dogs?
No, just selling in the street, vending in general.
Okay.
I want to tell you, no matter what you're selling, no matter where you're working, it is really hard to be in the street every day. You deal with the weather when it's too cold, when it's 20 degrees, we still have to go out and make a living.
Yeah.
When it's raining or snowing, we don't care. We still have to go out and make a living. We have to work really long hours and get paid very little, sometimes even less than the minimum wage.
I was wondering, what do you think the average take home is for these guys?
Well, it really depends on how much money you make. So it depends on the sale. So usually, like as a hot dog vendor, I used to take 30% of whatever I make.
Uh-huh.
So in a very cold day, when I make like $100, I go home with $30. After really, really long hours.
And where do you park the equipment at the end of the day?
We park the carts in a commissary, which is like a garage for the food carts.
Uh-huh.
It's something that's licensed by the Department of Health. We can't just park it anywhere in a garage. It's like a very specific thing.
Right.
Yeah. So it's been like really hard that dealing with the weather is one thing, but like there are thousands of other challenges. I can tell you about it. Like, you know, vendors on the street are very vulnerable to anything.
They're also vulnerable to regulation and laws.
True.
And Matt Shapiro, I wanted to ask you about this because I know you've dealt with the legal challenges. I remember Mayor LaGuardia was trying to crack down on the food vendors and I guess put them in like a fixed location, which LaGuardia did too back in the day. So what are the laws for street vending?
Yeah, it's very complicated and there's lots of barriers that exist due to sort of the patchwork regulations that has come up over the years. Basically, to be a food vendor, you have to have a permit for your cart or truck, and you have to have a license for yourself. So the license is like an ID badge. Anyone can get one of those. You have to take a course offered by the Department of Health on food safety. The problem lies with the permits, because since 1983, the city has capped the number of permits that they issue to mobile food vendors.
How many?
3,000 citywide permits. There's 1,000 more seasonal permits, which are valid from April through October. There's 1,000 green cart permits, which are valid only for whole fruits and vegetables in certain areas of the city. That was a program.
But all five boroughs, there's only 3,000 year-round?
Right, 3,000 citywide full-term permits, which means if you have one of these permits, you're not restricted to a particular borough. So that's been in place since 1983. So if you want, let's say you want to be a food vendor, you would think that you could just go to the city and say, hey, I'd like to be a food vendor. I have this great spot. Please give me a permit so I can start this business. But unfortunately, the answer is no. Because of the limit of the number of permits, there's a decades-long waiting list that exists.
And that's also, that also covers the trucks.
That's right. So one of these permits is valid for either a push cart or a truck. So the problem that happens when there's a lot of demand for these permits and a limited number of supply, there's this underground market that exists. So if you want to be a food vendor, you have to find someone that holds one of these permits. Maybe they used to be a vendor. Maybe they're retired and maybe they have a different job now. And then they rent it out to you on this underground market.
I'm WNYC reporter Beth Fertig, filling in today on WNYC Midday. It's our Please Explain segment. We're talking about street food in New York City, and we've taken some calls, or we've gotten some calls, and I'm going to take one right now. John O. in the West Village, welcome to the show.
Hey, good afternoon. Actually, this question dovetails to the topic you were just discussing about location and permits. That's the official side of it. I'm wondering if your guests have any anecdotes about the unofficial turf wars of where a cart gets to go. I mean, there are good corners and there are lousy corners. Are corners passed down through families? Are there fights over it? If I show up on a corner, am I allowed to legally just be next to another cart? How is it sorted out in the unofficial rituals of carts and trucks?
Thank you. That's a great question. Which one of you wants to take this? I see you looking at each other.
Matt, maybe.
I can explain. So
Matt's the lawyer.
So let's start with the official. There's no official designated spots on the city sidewalks for certain vendors. It's a first come, first serve situation. But it's true, there are many vendors who have been vending in particular locations for many, many years. So most vendors tend to respect that, whereas if you have a chicken and rice cart on 43rd Street, someone else is probably not going to bring a chicken and rice cart and put it right next to your cart because they tend to respect that you've been there for a long time. And, you know, sometimes you'll hear in different media publications between fights over spots. And, you know, maybe a few times that happens. But vendors tend to work it out amongst themselves because they know that they're each trying to make a living. So, yeah, I would think that, you know, the official way is first come, first serve. But sort of the unofficial negotiations that happen on the street, in our experience, vendors tend to respect one another and the longevity that certain vendors have built up on particular locations.
We have another caller. Welcome. Hi, is this Jadonia?
Yes, hello, hi.
Hi.
I wanted to know, how are you, the health standards determined in terms of, like, the cleanliness? I actually have two questions. And also, how would I recognize a non-licensed street vendor, you know, with the food carts?
Thanks.
Is there a way to distinguish between the actual legitimized, you know, with licenses?
Right,
and
it's not like the restaurants that have the ABC thing from the health department. Okay, so you want to take that one, Matt?
Yes, very good and timely question. Some people do not know that mobile food vendors in New York have to follow the exact same health code that restaurants do. All of the regulations that apply to restaurants apply to mobile food vendors. And in fact, mobile food vendors have even additional regulations that only they have to follow. So the health department inspects mobile food vendors just like they do restaurants. They issue permits for mobile food vendors. So the way you know that a particular vendor has a permit is if you go on the outside of their cart, you can see a sticker that's been issued by the Department of Health. So, you know, if you walk in Midtown Manhattan, you'll see all the stainless steel carts. They all have these stickers that are placed on the outside of the push cart. So that's how you know. And soon enough, the Department of Health will also be issuing letter grades for mobile food vendors. So look forward to that soon.
And what about getting a permit?
So, right, the official way is to apply for a permit from the city. But like I said before, the city's not issuing those permits. So what you would have to do is you would have to find someone that is a permit holder that may not be vending right now and work with them to develop your mobile food vending business.
And you're working on that, Mohammed.
Yes, that reminds me a lot of myself, like 6 years ago when I started my own business. And yeah, I just remember these days when I walked down to the consumer affair, like Department of Consumer Affairs, to apply for a permit. And I was like laughed at, like, hey, what are you doing here? You can't get a permit here. The permits are capped a while ago.
How did you get one finally?
So I had to talk to my friends and this whole vendors community, like, hey, how do you guys get your permit? How can I get one to be selling legally? Like, I mean, I have a license, but the license without a permit doesn't mean anything. Uh-huh. I need a permit for the cart. So it's like a very underground market that's run by a lot of people. And you have to talk to somebody who knows somebody and then go pay them a lot of money. So the permit nowadays costs up to $25,000 just to rent it out for 2 years.
You mean you rent that permit from somebody else?
I rent the permit from somebody else. And it is completely shady area that nobody understands how it works. It's very, very tricky. Also, it is non-transferable permit. So when I buy the permit or I rent the permit from that person, uh-huh. I don't get it under my name. It's still under their name, but I still have to pay them that much money every 2 years. And if anything happened before the government, before the Department of Health, they look like they are the owners of the cart. And basically, they pay the city $200 and they get $25,000 instead.
It's kind of like the taxi medallion system, you know, where that was capped.
Yeah.
And 20 years ago, those medallions were super valuable. You know, people were charging $1 million for them. And now these permits to be a street vendor when it's a limited market are also very valuable because you
true.
Could also use that for the trucks, you know, the fancier things like the lobster rolls. And, you know, is there like a really tough competition now that the trucks have moved into and you've got them competing with the street vendors, the traditional ones?
Well, I won't really say there is a competition. I mean, like we've seen many blocks with like different trucks and different cars, and we see that every vendor has their own customers. Like sometimes at the lunchtime, I walk by 6th Avenue and Park Avenue and I see every truck have mm-hmm. a line and every cart have a line. So like they provide different foods.
But
so
you're all competing for the permits.
Which is true. And this is the problem with the city, that the city is not increasing the number for over 30 years now. But like when they look at the restaurants, how many restaurants were there back then in 1983? And today is 2018 and the city hasn't done anything.
And you have a campaign to change that?
We have a campaign. That's true. It's been running for over 40 years. And in the last 4 years, we work really hard with the city council. We work with all the council members and the mayor. And really sadly, we have seen the mayor promising us in the last year many, many times in many town hall meetings that he's working on it and he will get it done as soon as possible. And last year in December, we had this legislation pushing forward to get a vote from the city council. And then the mayor just stopped it and said, we don't have enough time. We need enough time to study this. And I remember when the city first proposed this legislation was back in October 2016. And then in December 2017, the mayor said there is not enough time. So we're really looking at, okay, when is this legislation going to be reintroduced? When is it going to be proposed? When the city is actually trying to do something about it, especially that these days it is not about just permitting these vendors or giving them a chance, but it's a very big issue with the immigrants. You know that 90% of these vendors are immigrants, and most of them or some of them are undocumented. It is really scary these days, and we have seen that once Trump got elected. We have seen that at the beginning of 2017 when we were walking around in neighborhoods where we know that there are a lot of vendors there, and we see absolutely nobody.
What do you mean?
There were no vendors. Nobody want to go out, sell without a permit because they are really scared. The NYPD can arrest mm-hmm. them. So it's really scary now. It's not
even though this is a sanctuary city, and
here you
you're
go. Thank
supposed
you.
To be safe if you're an undocumented immigrant. But if
That's
you get arrested
true.
By the police and you show up at a court date, even if the police don't turn you into ICE, Immigration and Customs
Enforcement, might go to court and find ICE agent there.
Right.
Which
so
is really scary.
I was wondering how big an impact Trump's policies have had on the, on
it
the
is
vendors.
It is huge. I have to tell you that. It is really huge. Now, it
are
is
they
not
looking
only
to sell those permits? Would they now want to get out of the business because they don't want to have scuffles with the law and get into any trouble?
Well, like some of them are actually trying to look for something else. So we mm-hmm. know some vendors who just quit vending at all. But I'm looking at the vendors who sell without a permit just to make a few dollars every day.
Right.
Like I know a lady who goes sell mangoes in the street every day. I know a man who go out there sell cold water. They still need a permit from the Department of Health. And of course, they can't afford paying $25,000 to somebody when they make a few bucks every day.
Right.
But this is how they make a living. And then when you look at how the mayor is calling New York City the sanctuary city, It is really not sanctuary for these vendors, let's be honest. These vendors need to be regulated and need to be legalized. They are doing their work every day. And the mayor promises a lot. We're still waiting. I remember 2 months ago, there was a town hall, and he promised the vendor that, yes, there is something going to happen quite soon. We have a really big hope on the administration and the city council. I believe it's the most progressive administration we've ever seen.
Well, who's opposed to it? There must be a political brinksmanship going on here. Is the restaurant industry opposed?
I would say it must be threatening to someone. That's true. I would say yes. And some people went against it, from the Hospitality Alliance, from the Biz Association, and they just have some issues and concerns about the unfair competition, which sounds to us like really crazy. And especially, I can tell you, as a vendor, as somebody working in the street, when I sell hot dogs in the street, there is no restaurant or a store sell hot dogs all over Times Square. So if you're a tourist and walking around a Times Square, you can't get that product for that price but from a cart. So when they talk about competition, look at what products are sold in the street or what products are sold in the restaurants and the stores, and how much are they? When we look at the big difference in the category of products and the prices, it is really huge. There is no way they compete with each other. And we have seen that many ways, and we have many studies that prove that even more cars and more vendors in the street increase the foot traffic and increase the business in the neighborhood. But of course, they ignore all of that, and you just complain about some businesses are going out because of the unfair competition. We never heard of a store or a restaurant going out because some vendors pop there. Mm-hmm. They always go out because of the greed of the landlords who double or triple sometimes the rent. But they never complain about that. They just complain about the vendor.
I just wonder if neighbors may not want too many things on the street, or if there's concerns about garbage, things like that,
Well, so we believe that the more the city help the vendors and regulate them and give them permits and get them to work legally, the better for the city, because they have to follow the rules. They have to go to the commissary every day. They can't even litter anything in the street. And we have seen a lot of changes coming up in that legislation that would be even benefiting the whole community and the whole city, and not only the vendors. So the vendors will get permits along with a lot of enforcement.
We got one call from somebody who wanted to know, just to shift gears for a moment, what happens to the food that doesn't get sold at the end of the day? What do you guys do with it?
Well, that's a good question. Usually all the cooked food that's not sold, it gets thrown out. And whatever, like the uncooked food that stay usually in the freezer, is staying in the freezer and kept in the freezer of the commissary.
Oh, okay. So you can park that overnight.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. There's a couple of other questions that we were curious about, that you said undocumented immigrants can get into this business. They just have to be concerned about whether they would get arrested for something else. And let's go to Andrew in Brooklyn. Let's take one more call. Hi, welcome to the show.
Hi. I'm a big supporter of the Street Vendor Project, and actually I've worked with Matt for a number of years. And I know the Vendy Awards are coming up. And I was just wondering, what the kind of impact has been of the Vendy Awards on the businesses that participate, and especially ones that win awards. Like, does that give a big boost to their business?
Yeah, that's right. So, yeah, thanks for mentioning the Vendy Awards coming up September 22nd on Governor's Island. Buy your tickets for a chance to taste food from the best 25 vendors in New York City and see who will be crowned the street food winner and winning the Vendy Cup this year. But it's true. We know that New Yorkers love street food, and we know that there's a lot of diverse street food in New York City, and the folks that do participate in the awards and win get a lot of attention, and we really have seen their businesses improve. We've seen a lot of folks that have stands or carts or trucks then go on to open up brick-and-mortar spaces after winning the award. So we're really excited for that event, and we hope everyone will come and support their love of street food.
Yeah. Well, that's how we end up with Halal Guys and all these chains of people who start off as street vendors. Well, I'd like to thank you all for joining me today. I'm Beth Fertig, and I've been speaking with Jennifer Schiffberg, who's Director of Graduate Food Studies at NYU Steinhardt, Mohammed Atiya, Co-Director of the Street Vendor Project at the Urban Justice Center, and Matt Shapiro, who's Legal Director of the Street Vendor Project. Thanks, all of you, for joining. I'm sure we're all hungry.
Yes, thanks for having us.
Thanks.